wherever you may be. Welcome inside the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alvstead, and featuring Seahawks sports writer and football analyst, Keith Myers.
Hello and welcome, Seahawks fans, to the Hawks Playbook Podcast, episode number 38. And I am your host, Bill Alvstead. I am here with sports writer, Seattle Seahawks sports writer and football analyst Keith Myers, joining us again on the show to co-host. Good morning, Keith. I understand you're a little under the weather, so maybe I'll do most of the talking today. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see how that goes. That'll be a change, because usually these shows are mostly me rambling on about nothing.
That's not true. I think we have a, you know, somewhat equal share. So, tough loss. You know, and I titled the episode "Seahawks Come Up Short" as kind of a play on the last play for the Seahawks in the game. But it definitely wasn't all Blair Walsh's fault, obviously. There were lots of different contributing factors to the game, and we're going to get into all that this week. And it's tough to lose at home, and we've lost at home a couple times this year, and that's something that's different too, that takes some adjusting to, and the way that we're losing and some of the injuries. And so it's just been kind of a tough year. In the news, before we get started with the featured segment, I wanted to mention at the top of the podcast this week, we've been mentioning it at the end the last couple weeks, and I don't want to lose anybody before we say it. We are changing our subscription feed, or going through that process, and I was going to have Keith explain, but I'll go ahead and explain it. Basically, what we need to do is we need those that are currently subscribers to our podcast via either Blog Talk Radio or iTunes or any podcast app that you're currently getting your feed from. What you'll need to do is you'll need to unsubscribe and then resubscribe. And what that does is that allows our new feed, which we are propagating from our website, to take over the subscription. And you'll continue then to get the podcast when it is published. And if you listen onto the website, that's fine. Nothing's going to change there. I just wanted to make sure we didn't lose any subscribers that have been subscribing since the beginning, particularly using Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Anything to add to that, Keith?
Or is the other thing that I would add is make sure you, when you resubscribe, you don't resubscribe to the same feed you've been getting. You need to resubscribe to the new feed. So we've got, if you go onto iTunes or Google Play or any of those and you search for Hawks Playbook, you're going to find two different podcasts. There's one with the old logo, which has kind of the neon green background and kind of a artistic like bird up front. That's the old feed. And then you'll have the new one, which has our updated logo with our names on it and all of that stuff. That's the new one. And so unsubscribe from the
glowing eye hawk.
Yes. Right. So unsubscribe from the old one and subscribe for the new one. It was the only way we could make it work to update our feed because we didn't have full control over all of that stuff in the past, and now we do. So just make sure that you subscribe to the new one, the one with our names on the logo and all of that, and you'll be good to go.
And I think we've kind of made a decision, I think, to probably continue this two feed thing going on. Until the end of the year, till the end of the season, something like that, and then we'll make the switch for sure. But we wanted to give you a fair warning so you have a chance to go and do that, because we don't want to lose any of you. The other thing in the news I kind of want to mention briefly is we had a couple other injuries yesterday, and I wanted to know if you heard anything. Mike Davis had a groin in the game, went out early after some actually looking really pretty decent. Now, as his runs, when he took handoffs, you know, were okay. I think he was picking up like, you know, 15, 20 yards at that point in the game. But those screen passes were outstanding. I mean, he just looks really nice in that receiving game out of the backfield, Keith.
Yeah. So with Davis, it's a groin injury. At this point, we don't have an update, but Pete Carroll said he didn't think it was that severe. Like, it was not, it's not going to keep, like, knock him out for the season or anything like that, but it's going to be, it's going to be tight for him to get back this week, is kind of the assumption. We'll see as we go forward. Shaq Griffin, it's a concussion. He's now in the concussion protocol. It's a short week. It's a 6-day week instead of a 7. That makes it harder for him to get back.
It's so, really hard to know, too, both on of those concussions, are how they look. Yeah. You know, it didn't look like Shaq was hit in the head terribly hard, but you just never know with those things. So we definitely need him back in that secondary, which is already severely depleted. And we'll talk about the secondary as we go through in the show. While we're on the topic of injuries, Keith, I thought in this show, you know, we don't normally like to use injuries as an excuse and so forth, next man up, all that kind of stuff. But at some point, the scales do tip when you've got too many injuries to overcome, and it really does impact the level of play on your team. And I think we may end up being in that particular area right now. You know, we never did get McDowell to start the season, our first round draft pick. So we don't really know exactly what we're missing there. We lost our starting left tackle. One of our main running backs, our third down running back in Procise, has never been healthy all year. Lacey's gone through some injuries and maybe never really was fully recovered from that ankle thing that he had last year. Certainly has lost his burst. Rawls has been hit and miss all year. Now we're out Cliff Averill, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor. We've missed Earl Thomas a bit this year so far. Odhiambo is now out on injured reserve. We've had Jokel out 6-7 weeks at this point. Will Hoyt's out. Jaron Reed. I'm probably missing a couple, 2-3 other guys that are key contributors. That's a lot of guys that really make a impact on your week-to-week team that are no longer playing or have limited time so far this season, Keith.
Well, I mean, injuries are a part of football. They're a part of the NFL, and every team has to deal with them. But the difference this year, I think, for Seattle is that it's who's injured. I mean, it's one thing for, you know, a couple of years ago when okay, it's been more than a couple now, but when Byron Maxwell got hurt and the Seahawks, Jeremy Lane got hurt, and then they had Marcus Burley opposite Richard Sherman at cornerback, because you still got Sherman and Chancellor and Earl Thomas back there, and you could make up for having, you know, a little bit of a weakness on one of those four. But now there's no Sherman, there's no Chancellor, and then in this game there was no Shaq Griffin for most of the game too. So it was all backups everywhere in the secondary, and you've got Earl Thomas is the only player back there, and he's in his first game back after missing a couple with an injury. So it you could tell. I mean, it was the secondary was nothing like it's ever been under Pete Carroll. It just did not look good. It did not. There was no.
You know, they did hold down the passing in this game. I was actually impressed with that stat. But, you know, Atlanta proved that it really didn't need Matt Ryan to come through with a big game, you know, yesterday. So, yeah, you're right, Keith.
Okay, yeah, they did shut down the passing game. But there's a big caveat there. And that's they could not stop them on third down. At the end of the game, what was it? It's pretty crazy what the stat was. Was it 11 of 14 third down conversions?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Got it written down.
9 of 14 third down plays.
Of 14. But at one point it was like 5. They were 5 for 5, and then they were like 8 out of 9. And so the defense kind of stepped up at the end once Atlanta had the big lead, and they were you know, trying to run the ball a lot and, you know, run the clock down. But before that, they just could not get off the field. Third and 10, third and 14, third and 11. It was just conversion, touchdown. And then it was like the first couple of
times. How did you feel like our secondary was playing overall?
I didn't think
like Maxwell and Lane and I mean, they did an okay job, and they really had a tough assignment. I mean, Julio Jones is one of the best athletic receivers in the NFL. And
absolutely.
Yeah, there was a couple of connections with him, you know, in jump ball kind of situations and stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's a hard. NFL's a hard game.
It is. And Julio's...
You've got players that aren't Sherman now that are playing.
Yeah, Julio's a tough assignment for anyone. He's a tough assignment for Sherman. That's a great matchup and one that I've been looking forward to since the schedule came out, and we were, you know, yeah. Sherman's injury means we didn't get it, but it's tough. And so do you judge them based on the quality of competition, or do we judge them by what we saw them do? And there was just a lot of mistakes. There was some poor communication at times. There were some coverage breakdowns at times. Lane, he had that penalty that I thought was like as ticky-tack as possible.
Yeah.
I'm not really going to blame him on
the secondary in general, Keith. It's like I almost expected the Seahawks to play the way that they did in the secondary, and specifically on defense. I thought that was kind of a given. I knew that we would have to play up on the offense to have a chance, kind of an air-free game to have a chance in this game. And in the end, that's kind of what cost us was the errors. We had the two early turnovers in the first, 15 minutes of the game that really put us back on our heels. And then, boy, did we really try to recover. I mean, I thought we outplayed Atlanta after that point until the very end there, where we gave ourselves a chance right at the very end to tie it up. And that's just a lot to overcome. And then you add the injuries into that, the turnovers. And then, quite frankly, I think we need to talk about some of the coaching choices and decisions in this game that impacted the game. And I'm a big fan of Pete Carroll, just as big as anybody else. But some of the choices that he's made, not only in this game, but throughout the year, time clock management, all that other kind of stuff, really starting to have an impact.
Well, I think one of the big things here is that you've got a situation where Pete Carroll is still coaching a team as if he has an elite defense. He doesn't have an elite defense right now. With Sherman gone,
a running Kanzler, game.
Yeah, he doesn't have a running game that can manage the clock. He doesn't have an elite defense that can, keep the other team off the scoreboard. You've got to adjust the way that you call games, the way that you game plan for games, knowing that those two things aren't there. They're still approaching games as if this is 2014 and 2013 when they had that incredible defense and Marshawn Lynch, and those things don't exist anymore. So they need to adjust.
Well, let's talk about the, I don't know what it is, like the misplaced bravado or whatever it takes in the mind to think that you can go for a fake field goal at the end of the first half when you really don't need to. You'd rather take those points to make it a one-score game when you come out of the half and you're getting the kickoff and you've got a chance to go ahead in the game. Instead, you leave those points out on the field. The fake field goal attempt was just weird in its design when you're shuffling the ball to Luke Wilson and expecting Luke Wilson to literally run 25 yards untouched into the end zone for a touchdown, because it was either a touchdown or it was nothing. At the situation, we had 7 seconds on the clock, Keith. It's bizarre in the way that it unfolded there. I didn't even react. Because I was stunned. I was just looking at the TV going, what? It was crazy.
See, what was the Pete Carroll quote? It would have been a great call if it had worked. yeah, but what are your chances of it actually working, Coach?
Says any coach on any play in the NFL, yeah.
I didn't get it at the time. I still don't get it now. I mean, What are you doing there? If there's 28 seconds on the clock and you run that play because you think, let's catch them off guard. They're expecting the field goal. They're coming at it. Let's run this play. And the reason why you do it with 28 seconds on the clock instead of 7 is because you could still get a first down, run up and spike it. and then kick the field goal, or take a shot at the end zone and then kick the field goal. So you have...
Or you weirdly, know, you're running it on third down or something.
Yeah.
You know, you
can
run it early.
So you can do something like that if there's enough time, because you could get the first down. In this case, Wilson has to make it to the end zone or nothing. Because,
or the sideline, weirdly. It would have been weird
but
either
even
way.
Then, with 7 seconds, you're giving it to him right in the middle of the field. And so he's got to go get a first down and get out of bounds. And the time's going to run out on you. So it just doesn't make any sense. Take those points. I mean, they were well within field goal range. Just take the points.
Well, and Pete Carroll said, well, hey, it worked in practice. You know, it looked good. And then, you know, in a game, Atlanta kind of was heads up to the fact that they may run a fake. They left their first string defense in there, mm-hmm. and their nose tackle blew by Tyler Ott like he wasn't even there and blew that play up in the backfield before it even had a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a complete befuddled play.
See, you look at that situation, you go out there and you're like, okay, we want to run this fake kick. And then you realize that they don't have their field goal block. They don't have their field goal block team in there. They've got defenders there, and you don't have your offense. Don't run the play. You get to the line and you either take the penalty or you have it set up, you know, so that John Ryan, who's the holder there, makes a call and says, no, we're going to kick this because we don't have the right look we're getting from the defense for this play to work. Somebody's got to make that call. And I think that the fact that Pete Carroll takes that out of the player's hands and doesn't give somebody, my guess would be John Ryan would be the best one, the right to make that call when you see that they have their starting defense on the field still, that's a mistake. You can't run that fake against that defense. It's just not going to work. It's never going to work.
Now, that's certainly a play that you can point to in the game that legit cost us points, especially at the end where we could have already been tied and going for the winning field goal. And the other situation I wanted to talk about that was directly impacted on the game that was a Carroll mistake was that
challenge,
the charge timeout because of the challenge that was lost. Clearly, it looked like a non-catch. What's the deal there?
What you've got is for those of us watching, you know, with all the camera angles, it was pretty clear that Baldwin didn't catch it, but Baldwin thought he caught it. So he jumped up and ran over to Pete Carroll and said, throw the flag, throw the flag, throw the flag. I caught that, I caught that. And Pete Carroll listened and threw the flag. And that's not how your replay system should work. I mean, you have to have a protocol in place as a team. The people upstairs... Yes. Looking at replays, you know, in the booth, need to be radioing down to Pete Carroll.
And I'm sure that they were. I'm sure that they were. But you know what? In Carroll's defense, I will say this. Baldwin has made these calls before and they've worked out.
True.
And so I think Carroll was following his gut and listening to his player on the field. And sometimes, you know, cameras don't see every little minute detail, and maybe he thought that in a close game where he needed every single play he was going to trust his receiver there. I get it, but it shouldn't have happened. It really shouldn't have happened.
We say that Baldwin has made these calls before, and that is true. He has. He's come over and told Carroll to throw the challenge, and he has, and they won. But that also is a problem. I mean, yes, it worked out in those other cases, but Pete Carroll needs to be listening to the guys who can see the camera angles to know if there's video evidence. Because there's one thing for Doug Baldwin to say he caught it. It's another thing for the camera angles to show that he did, because we have to overturn a call. There has to be a camera angle that proves it.
That's very true. Okay.
And
good
you've
point.
Got people upstairs looking at those camera angles, looking at those replays, making that judgment. And you let them do their job.
I think the overarching idea of everything that we've talked about so far in today's podcast is the fact that the margin of error has significantly gone down for this team to be able to win games. You know, we talked about the injuries. You talked about just now the overturning the calls and making sure everything's right. We talked about overcoming stupid things like the fake field goal attempt. We talk about turnovers and we talk about all that kind of stuff. You know, in the last two home games alone, we've had 3 missed field goal attempts, 3 interceptions, 24 accepted penalties, a disaster of a fake punt, a wasted timeout, injuries. There's just no margin of error. And it requires everybody to play perfect. And quite frankly, we're not a perfect team. We're a flawed team.
Yeah. And I mean, that, and that's really what it comes down to is if you look, if you go back and look, time management has never been a Pete Carroll skill. You go back to 2013 and 2014, the Super Bowl years, and there are plenty of games, especially at the end of the first half, where the team butchered the clock and screwed things up and cost themselves points at the end of first half. They do it all the time. They've done it all of Pete Carroll's tenure here, and it hasn't mattered for the most part because they do weird, they do quirky stuff. It doesn't really matter because in the end, they're the better team. They come out, they prove it in the second half. They're a second half team anyway, and they win. So it doesn't matter. But the margin for error, as you said, the margin for error has gotten smaller and smaller. The injuries, the team's, you know, not as good up front on the line as it used to be, and just all these other little things have decrease the margin for error. They can't make those mistakes and win like they used to. They need to be smart about those things. And they're still, this is what I was saying earlier, they're still coaching these games as if they have an elite defense and a running game. And they don't have either of those things.
Yeah. Well, they do have Russell Wilson, you know, and he gives you a chance in every game. He really does. Now, he did make some critical errors in this mistake up front, but that shouldn't have cost them a game standing alone. And he almost came back and made it happen for the team. He rushed 7 times for 86 yards, threw for 258, a couple TDs, had the 2 turnovers as well. We had 3 other running backs on the team, had a total of 50 yards on 16 carries. And last night, Russell Wilson became, it was his 5th game, with 250 yards passing, at least 250, plus 50 yards rushing, and 1 pass TD and 1 rush TD. Only the 2nd player in NFL history to do that. So he's an elite guy.
Who is the other player to do that? Was it Randall Cunningham or Michael Vick?
Both those guys were on the list, but the guy at the very top is Cam Newton, that has 8 games.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that was the other one. I just, when they start talking about, he's the 2nd player in NFL history, I tend to go like, let's go back because it's probably not current. When you hear those kind of stats, I started looking backward. I figured, you know, Randall.
Yeah, Cam Newton. Cam Newton's only the other guy in the top 5 that is still active. And Cam's a great player. I mean, he's obviously legit, but
yep.
I would take Russell Wilson. Just for the aspect of his fourth quarter play. I mean, Russell Wilson's an amazing fourth quarter quarterback. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I've seen him recently that point to him as just being off the charts, literally.
Russell Wilson is an amazing quarterback. It's just that in the fourth quarter, the Seahawks untie his hands and tell him to go win the game.
Yeah.
And what I would love to see is for the team to untie his hands earlier in the game. Turn it over to him in the second quarter if the running game's not working and let him go. I mean, they did that a few games ago when he threw for 450 yards in that win over Houston. They had to.
I think, Keith, if he has those 2 other drives where they've turned the ball over, I think he's got even more impressive stats. I mean, It looked like he was able to operate throughout the entire game, this game, and they were going to let him go. I mean, they obviously, the running game itself is not working. I mean, there are aspects of it, though, coming off of the play action and all that kind of stuff that seemingly are giving the running game an opportunity. I mean, it looked like we might have had an opportunity to run the ball in this game as the game went on. But when Mike Davis went out,
yeah,
that was the end of that opportunity, because Lacy's just not giving you that look.
Lacy's not doing it. Rawls isn't getting it done. Really, it's been, you know, Chris Carson was good. You get, and then now Mike Davis looked, he's been the second best running back that the Seahawks have lined up back there. And he's been on the practice squad the entire time.
What do you think that's about, Keith? Because it's interesting to me that, say, guys like you and I, just looking at film, looking at the player profile and what might work with our offensive line and so forth, taking all that into account, to us, it looks like Mike Davis would be the obvious choice, the guy that would have the opportunity to be most successful, if you will. And I mean, I've been talking about Mike Davis for most of the year on the podcast and so forth. Like, when are we going to see Mike Davis? We could use Mike Davis right now, because Thomas Rawls or Prosize is not doing it. Look at what Mike Davis did in the preseason, catching the ball out of the backfield. Let's give him a shot. Nothing. And then all of a sudden we bring him up, and sure enough, he produces a little bit. Unfortunately, he got the groin thing, but I think if he would have stayed in, he continued to impact the game.
Well, part of it is that you look at him and you look at the rest of the guys on the team. They weren't going to cut Lacy because of the guaranteed money on his deal.
And that's the deal, isn't it, Keith? Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
Lacy's making $4 million a year to take 6 snaps a game.
Yeah. I mean, and that's about all he's worth. He doesn't have any burst left. He looks really slow. He looks done as a player. Just too many injuries, his knee, his ankles, all that kind of stuff. I just don't think he's got anything left in the tank. But the team wanted an experienced running back in the room for meetings. Someone who could, you know, lead the group and just know what he's looking at when it comes to film. And they really wanted that experienced guy. And they took a shot on Lacy. It hasn't worked out. I think there's something to be said about having that experience there and having someone that they can depend on in the room as a coach. Not as a coach, but as a veteran player with the coaches. But on Sundays, you're missing a big aspect of your game if that player, that veteran, cannot produce on the field. So the team really counted on Rawls to be the guy he was as a rookie, and he hasn't been that guy. They really counted on Prosize to be the guy he was for a few games last year as a rookie, and he just has not been able to get on the field and be healthy, and now he's on injured reserve. So it really comes down to those two guys were the guys they were really expecting to be major contributors, and they haven't been. And then, of course, you have the Chris Carson injury, because he was the starter. Yep. He was the best of the group. He broke his ankle. He's out.
And we lucked into that. I mean, maybe, you know, lucked into it is not the right term. I mean, we went out and got the guy, but the last pick of the 7th round for the Seahawks, and he turned into like the best deal. Now, sometimes you have discoveries like that, which is awesome. And if anything, if this year proves to be not exactly what we want as far as going deep into the playoffs, maybe we discover a couple pieces that can help us next year. I think Chris Carson is definitely one. Maybe you pair Chris Carson with a guy like Mike Davis. Maybe Mike Davis is the third down guy, where he can catch the ball out of the backfield and give you also some of that physical thing that Chris Carson does in the first couple of downs. You're not missing much when you put Mike Davis back in there, and that would be kind of a nice little tandem. And McKissick isn't that bad. I think if you had those three guys healthy all the time, you know, that might make a difference on our run game.
Well, see those three guys. Well, see with McKissick, he offers you the third down receiving skills, the mismatch. He's a gadget player. He's, you know, Danny Woodhead, or maybe not quite Darren Sproles, but he's a gadget player. I mean, that's who he is. I still don't really count him in the running back group. But having Davis and Carson going forward, I think, is a great setup. The only player that I would add to that group is Procise, assuming he can be healthy. And that's a huge assumption, because athletically he is so gifted. And we saw that last year.
I don't know,
Keith.
I think
when he played, he was so good. But
I agree.
How do you depend on him?
I think you have to hedge. Here's another situation where, unfortunately, you're going to have to hedge that bet.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to go out and get somebody else in the offseason that replaces Procise, or at least challenges Procise for that spot.
Well,
I think you're going to have to do that in the draft.
I think with Mike Davis and McKissick on the roster, you have your hedge, because both of those guys can be your third down back if you need them to. If Procise can find a way to stay healthy next year.
How do you do that, Keith? He's had so many ankle and lower leg injuries. I just don't understand. I don't know if he's built for the NFL.
Well, you've got to go out and he's got to strengthen all of all the muscles and everything that's down there around him. He's got to tighten that stuff up. He's got to just really focus on the calves, the shin, all the muscles, all the ligaments, everything down there, and have all of his training be, you know, in those areas, and hope that it's enough. But it's hard, because those kind of injuries are the ones that having them makes you more susceptible to them later. It's not like a broken bone where you break it, it heals, you're fine. Those soft tissue injuries have a way of reoccurring, because you stretch things out, other things get tight, and then the joint doesn't work the same way it used to. So it's tough. It really is tough.
So anything else on the Atlanta game before we move on?
No, I just want to see the Seahawks clean up the penalties, clean up those mistakes. I need the coaching. I really want to see the coaching just stop pretending that this is the 2013 and 2014 teams. Recognize you have better receivers now. You've got Russell Wilson. Go let him be the offense and stop trying to run it on first and second down and setting up third and long all the time and expecting Wilson to bail you out. Just go game plan for the team you have, not for the team you want to be.
Well, okay. Let's do that. So throughout the year, we've kind of gauged expectations and taken a look and come back after wins and losses and adjusted kind of what we're thinking. We've got 6 games to go in the season. We're going to talk about San Francisco, our next opponent, next Sunday. We're going to do that next. But after that, we've got Philadelphia at home, Jacksonville on the road, the Rams at home, at Dallas, at Arizona. Just looking at that schedule, based on the team that we have, we could easily go 3-3 on that remaining schedule and end up being a 9-7 team. We could put it together and go on a run and get, be 4-2 in those games, or maybe even 5-1. But if we were 5-1 out of that remaining schedule, that would blow me out of the water. I would be blown away, and I would be ecstatic, and I would be thinking that we could make a serious run in the playoffs. I just don't know if we have that run in us, Keith.
It's hard to say right now without the defense being what the coaches think it is. With the injuries, I don't see the defense being the elite defense they used to have.
And without a running game, that combo right there, that lack of superior defense with the lack of running game, I mean, you've got to have it. You've got to be a complete team to go deep in the playoffs. Yeah.
And so to win these games, they have to turn Russell Wilson loose and let him go throw for 300, 330, 3 touchdowns. They have to know going in that Wilson's going to have to win these games for him, and they've got to give him the opportunity to do it. And if they do that, I could see them making a run here. The only two games in that, on that schedule that scare me are Philadelphia, which is at home, and Jacksonville on the road. And people are like, Jacksonville? I mean, you know, this is the Blake Bortles show. But
yeah.
But one, it's on the road. Two, it's 10 a.m. It's the 1:10 a.m. Start this year. And three, that defensive front in Jacksonville is
well, and the back end of that defense too. So they're leading the league in pass defense and total defense
and sacks.
And sacks. Yeah, that's a defense.
That is a defense. That is a really good defense. And they are going to stifle Seattle's offense because no running game, a weak offensive line.
Yeah.
And they're good, you know, pretty much everywhere. So you're not going to, Russell Wilson's not going to be able to beat them.
Yeah. By himself, see, that's why this Atlanta game was so disappointing and so tough, because we could have really used that win. Because I'm telling you, if you could somehow get by Philadelphia, maybe you take that Jacksonville loss, and all the other games are winnable. You know, if we had won that Atlanta game, based on the way that we lost the Atlanta game and the fact now that we've lost Chancellor and Sherman and so forth going forward, I don't know how long Reed's going to be out. Now I'm beginning to question all of these games. I think, you know, you win in San Francisco, we're still a better, way better team than San Francisco. Philadelphia at home, now all of a sudden we're susceptible at home. Not only susceptible, but Philadelphia is a really good team. They've proven that week in, week out. It's not just an aberration on their record is really good. They're actually a really good team. Jacksonville on the road. If they were at home, I could see that game being in our favor a little bit. On the road at 10 a.m. That's might be the toughest game left on the schedule, given that scenario. It depends on what we do against Philadelphia. Maybe we come in and surprise Philadelphia and wipe them out, and that Jacksonville game looks a little better. And then L.A. Rams at home. Again, a team that we should be beating. I think the Rams are overrated in a sense that the wins that they have are against defenses that aren't great. When they face good defenses, and we still are a good defense, even though we're down some players, that could be a challenging game for them. At Dallas, I don't know how to feel about Dallas. I think they could come in and snip you on a good day. They're going to get their running back that game.
That's the problem, is Zeke Elliott is coming back. He's serving his suspension, and he will be back to play Seattle. That'll be his first game back. He's going to be hungry. He's going to be rested, healthy, all of that. It's just the worst possible timing for him to be his first game back. Hopefully.
See, that's a game, Keith. If you lose that, say you lose Philadelphia, say you lose Jacksonville, and say you lose that Dallas game for whatever reason, or the Rams game, either one of those.
Then you don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, 9-7 is not going to get it done this year, I think, in the NFC.
Not in the NFC. You got to have 10 wins, and you got to have a tiebreaker over someone. They don't have the tiebreaker over Atlanta because they just screwed that up.
Or Washington.
Yep. Though I don't think Washington will hang in this race, but that's just me. What it comes down to when I look at this is I'm not looking at the wild card. I'm looking at the division.
Yeah.
Because this week, San Francisco, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, they need to win this game, and they need to win it without it being like difficult at all. I mean, San Francisco was bad. Arizona's a mess. They need to win that game. Both of those games are winnable. They already beat the Rams on the road. Now they're going to get them at home. You win that game. Make sure you got the tiebreaker over the Rams. And
that'd be 6-0 in your division.
You're right. It is. And the other thing that does is, the Rams lost a winnable game this last week.
Minnesota.
So, I mean, Minnesota's a good team, but it's still Case Keenum at quarterback. And the way that game like broke out, like I really thought the Rams had a shot to win at that going in, and they didn't. And so that loss gives the Seahawks some room because
we're still only one back right now.
Exactly. They're only one back, and they still play the Rams. So if they go out and beat the Rams at home, and remember, they already beat them on the road, that puts them even as far as the record goes and gives them the tiebreaker. So look at that. Look at the division. Go win the division. Get those three wins. Pick up one more between the Jacksonville, Dallas, and Philly trio. Pick up one more win in that, and I think you win the division. I think 10-6.
10-6.
At 10-6, I think that wins the division.
On a tiebreaker.
The Rams will also end up 10-6. The Seahawks will win the division on the tiebreaker and get in with the home playoff game.
Is that your best case scenario that you're looking at, Keith? Or is that your most realistic scenario?
I think that's the most realistic scenario of what we're going to see happen going from here on out, unless something crazy happens, like Earl gets hurt again or Russell goes down or something like
that. Or we win an unexpected game.
Yeah, so I think that's the scenario that I see playing out. The best case scenario would, of course, be that we are able to go 5-1 and maybe lose the Philly game, but win against Dallas and on the road at Jacksonville, and pick up a home playoff or a first round bye as the 2 seed behind Philly, and get so you have a bye and then a home playoff game to get into the NFC Championship game. So I think that is the best case scenario, but more realistic, I think, it is you win one of those 2 games and not both. And
we haven't winning the division. Winning, going 5-1 in the last 6 with that schedule in the way that we're made up right now. I mean, that'd be a heck of a run. I mean, I would be really proud of my team. I mean, that would be a team that where you're putting Russell Wilson's putting the entire team on his shoulders and just going for it. And I'm not giving up on that idea. I think it's attainable. You can see that that's attainable. It would just take a lot of things to happen and a lot of good games, good, well put together games where you're competing on the defense. Your offense is really put together. There's no other mistakes. The penalties start to come down. Pete Carroll game manages, for the first time in a couple of years really well. I mean, all things come together, right? And you can win 5 games. I think that is possible. I think you're right, though. I think more realistically, we're looking at 3-2.
Well,
Four and two.
Yeah.
4-2 in the last 6.
Yeah, I think that is a, I think it's realistic. I think as long as one of those 4 wins comes in, against LA at home,
yeah,
I think it's enough to get them the division and get them.
Well,
and ten and six
is right where we were last year. I tell you what, here's the thing: if we're at 10-6 and we head into the playoffs and we're going to be on the road or whatever, or maybe we win that division and we're in the we get a home game or whatever. Okay, so we're kind of back where we were last year. This team, though, you look at the team itself, is good enough to beat any team on any given Sunday. Yeah. And so you never know when you get to that point what you can put together and steal one on the road or whatever it takes in the playoffs. It's a whole new ball game.
It is. And, sometimes it's all about who, getting hot at the right time. And
that's exactly right.
If the team gets in at 10-6 and has that home playoff game, which they get a win, and then they have to go on the road twice in order to get to the Super Bowl – but then all of a sudden, Russell Wilson heats up and he's completing, passes like he was a couple of years ago, and at just like at the 76% completion rate, or the running game just comes together at the right time, or we start to see Frank Clark just really start beasting out. You know what I mean?
It's interesting, Keith, too, because that offensive line could start to come together. I mean, it sounds like Jokel's coming back. See, Brown, Jokel, Brett, and then you get Abushi out of there, right?
Yeah, you get Abushi out of there because they're going to move Posick over to the right side, which I think is
And all of a sudden, the weakest link on the line is Ifedi, and everyone else is pretty competent.
Yeah, and he's been the weakest link for a long time, and I don't think that's going to change.
But nonetheless, though, you can put together somewhat of a competent line, though, even with him out there. And
because you still have 4 out of the 5 that are decent, and Wilson knows where the pressure is coming from on almost every play, because it's always going to be coming from his right side where he can see it because it's not his blind side, and he can, do his Russell Wilson thing and avoid it. And
yep. And Chris Carson comes back, and say Mike Davis is healthy, and you know, and all of a sudden you start to put something together, you're a little bit more balanced. And when you're a little bit more balanced, you take a little bit more pressure off of that defense, which I think the Seahawks offense right now needs to step up and do that.
Chris Carson maybe coming back in, you know, 3 weeks from now is huge. I don't think he'll be back that early and actually on the field. I think it's going to be maybe week 16. So with two games left, we may see him. But the fact that he is on the road back, he's out there, he's running, he's getting himself back in shape, he's doing some basic cutting, really limited at this point, but he's still 3 or 4 weeks away. The fact that he's doing all that after that injury, I think is crazy. But, you know, there's a chance. If he gets back out there for those last couple of weeks and in the playoffs, that changes Seattle's offense because he can provide balance. He can do everything they need to do as for the running back position. He really changes the dynamic of the offense and makes them significantly better.
By the way, Keith, you're doing really good for having a head cold. And I didn't even mention that ahead of time, but Keith's got a little head cold this morning, and you're just doing awesome, man. I think you should keep talking.
See, that's the thing is, maybe that's the thing is, I need to talk more when I'm sick, apparently, because I was coughing, my throat hurt, I was feeling like kind of run down, and then we get in here to do this recording, and I feel great now. So that's something awesome about doing the podcast makes me feel better.
You know, it's a fun show. We have a fun time. Maybe we just do.
That's awesome. Can we talk about San Francisco?
Yeah, let's go into San Francisco. We head to Levi Stadium down in Santa Clara, the last remaining road game in the division, right? Mm-hmm. Seattle faces the 1-9 49ers. The 49ers actually won last week against the Giants. So now they're not completely defeated. They've got one win. I really like John Lynch as a general manager. I think he's going to be terrific going forward, but they just didn't have enough time this year to put together anything resembling a NFL team. But he does have a few pieces, specifically though on defense. I think their defense is actually could be build on a few pieces to become kind of their signature thing. In fact, they've modeled it after the Seahawks defense. They've got guys like DeForest Buckner and Armistead and Reuben Foster, their draft pick, which I really like. Solomon Thomas, defensive end. Akella Witherspoon, which I really liked coming out of the draft. But their offense is kind of devoid of any talent whatsoever, Keith.
Yeah, the defense has pieces. The line is good. I really like Solomon Thomas. The back end, they've got a couple of nice players. You know, Wilkerson, Reed, when he's healthy, although he seems to, you know, kind of be the CJ Procise of San Francisco a little bit. But they've got some players there. And but overall, they don't have...
They're terrible. Yeah, they're terrible on both offense and defense fairly equally. I mean, even with all those players, they still rank almost last in, you know, points per game, and they only average about 17 points per game on offense, and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, so they've got some nice players, but then behind them, there's no depth. And the other starters that we haven't mentioned are just really poor. So they're not good at all. So, I mean, and so I think they have a future as a defensive team, but they don't have a present yet.
I think the only hope that the 49ers have in this game, the only reason why fans will be going to the game, I think, is to see their new quarterback. Their new guy that they got from New England, Jimmy Garoppolo, is pegged to start his first game for the 49ers, which kind of is their future.
Yeah, so they traded a second-round pick for New England's backup quarterback, which kind of surprised everybody because so I don't actually talk to anybody in New England, like around the team, but I've listened to people who do, and they said that Bill Belichick had picked Garoppolo to be his legacy. So he was going to coach Garoppolo up and coach him as a starter in the post Tom Brady era, then retire. And basically Garoppolo and that team was going to be his legacy. And Tom Brady's like, no, I'm not retiring. I may be 40, but I'm going to play till I'm 45. And Robert Kraft, the owner, was like, yeah, we're going to back Tom Brady here. He's earned it. And we're not going to pay Garoppolo all that money to be a backup, like, in order to keep him. So Belichick had to give and traded him just to get a draft pick. And so now you've got a what they think is a franchise quarterback, although we've seen very little of him in NFL games, in San Francisco.
And they're getting to the point, Keith, where they're not going to let Jimmy Garoppolo walk. I mean, they gave away a second-round pick, which is going to end up being the top of the second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo, and he is not under contract next year. So the San Francisco 49ers are going to have to either sign him before March or they're going to have to franchise him. And so he's basically looking at you know, $10, $12 million minimum per year. I think the franchise is even higher than that. It could be like 14 something, right? Or he's going to get a contract that's paying him way more money than he deserves.
Well, what he's going to get is he's going to get a Brock Osweiler contract.
I know.
So it's going to be the $16 to $18 million a year with way too much guaranteed for as little as he's done. But the alternative is that he walks and goes to another team.
Right.
Because somebody else will pay him. This is a quarterback starved league. Can you imagine if they decide not to franchise him and he ends up walking and goes to Jacksonville, who's desperate for a quarterback, or to Cleveland, or, you know what I mean? Like, somebody will pay him. So yeah, it's going to happen.
It's crazy. It's a definitely quarterback's world out there. Other than Garoppolo and their stars on defense, the 49ers just don't have anything to stop the Seahawks from winning this game. The only thing that's going to keep the Seahawks from winning this game is the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes. Because if they can go out and a bunch of stupid penalties and, you know,
some turnovers,
mistakes by the secondary that allow big plays, especially to the no-name, you know, pedestrian receivers that San Francisco has, you know, something that just allows them to stay in the game, a bunch of missed field goals by Walsh, something like that, that's what's going to have to happen in order for this game to remain close. And it shouldn't be.
A team like the 49ers will have a lot of pride, and it's a division opponent. And Seattle was once a hated division rival of theirs. And that may keep them in the game in the first half. I just don't see it happening in the second half. Seattle's just too good of a team. Even with all the injuries and depletions, we need to be able to go take care of business. The Seahawks are still 6-3, or 6-4? Sorry. The Seahawks are still 6-4. I mean, they're still a really good team with an opportunity that's laying right in front of them to be a 10 or 11-win team. They just need to go out and take it.
The biggest frustration I have when you say they're 6-4, that's a good team, is that, you know, there was that win that should have happened, but Blair Walsh missed 3 field goals.
Yeah.
And then there was last night's game, which was there for the taking, but, you know,
we got in our own way.
We got in our own way, and the stupid faked field goal and the wasted timeout, and then again, a Blair Walsh missed field goal. I get that 50-yard field goals they're not given. You have to realize that they're going to miss a few. But it was a 52-yarder, and it was short.
Straight, but short.
One of the big reasons why you bring in Walsh is because he's supposed to have a big enough leg to make
those. His career kicks long was 56, so it was within his range.
Yeah, and he left it short.
That was disheartening, Keith. I mean, we had a brief exchange text last night after the game, and it was just a sadness. I mean, it was one of those moments where you weren't really, it wasn't a pissed moment where you were that frustrated. It was a sadness that your team didn't take care of business in a game that they could have and should have won. I mean, you take away 3 things, that turnovers, and I know everyone is going to say, well, that's that, but you take that away, it looked like we dominated the game. It looks like we could have won that game by 20 points had those turnovers not happened. I mean, the whole game just completely changes. We had them corralled. Mm-hmm. So that's a little frustrating. It's frustrating.
In the second half, the defense stepped up and played better in the second half. The first half, I mean, they scored, I think they scored on their first three possessions, scored touchdowns.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks were down, 21-7 and just struggling to claw their way back into this game, the whole game. And so it was frustrating. Right. But at the end of the game, they not getting points at the end of the first half and not getting points at the end of the second half turned a win into a loss. And if you combine that with Blair Walsh's 3 missed field goal day.
Washington game,
the Seahawks were definitely the better team that week, and it was just missed field goals that caused. They should be 8-2 right now, and they're not. They're 6-4, and so instead of being okay, we're competing with Philly for that number one overall seed. Instead, that we're looking at okay, how do they get into the playoffs?
So
how
I got a question. I got a question for you. Without looking at any notes, just off the top of your head, what was the score of the first San Francisco game?
The first San Francisco game?
Yeah.
Honestly, I do not remember.
We only beat them 12-9.
Is that what it was? 12?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was back when the offense was scuffling and had nothing going whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now they've got Russell Wilson going, and the passing game is really working. So, if I remember right, that was also right after Chris Carson's injury, and they had yet to figure out anything. They were trying to run the ball with Lacy. And
the cool thing, though, Keith, is our team. When you look at our losses, we haven't lost any games by more than a score, by a single score. You know, the 17-9 against Green Bay, 8 point. I mean, we were within 8 points then, scoring a 2 point conversion. The loss.
What was the Tennessee game?
The 33-27, right? And we were there. We could have had that thing.
Yeah.
The loss against Washington is the one that you talked about before, the 14-17 game. Oh, that's just horrendous. You know, and then the 31-34, last night. So it's. Yep. Game of
the
inches.
Tennessee game stands out to me because they just ran the ball all over the Seahawks and they had a lead. And I guess, thinking back, Wilson got him back into it and scored a late touchdown and in order to get it close. But they needed a an onside kick and then a touchdown drive in 30 seconds in order to actually have a shot at that, and it wasn't going to happen. So that game, I don't think was as close as the score indicates. But the other games, the Seahawks were in. And the Atlanta game, I felt like they could have won if not for some coaching mistakes. The Washington game, they should have won if they had a field goal kicker that wasn't in his own head. That's what it comes down to, is it just they made way too many of those mistakes. And those 2 days, and those are the games that I think they should have won and they didn't. And so, and even if they pick one of those games up, being 7-3 now versus 6-4 is a big deal, because it's so much easier to get to 10 wins and get in the playoffs.
It's going to come down to the character of this team. If they want to go get it, that's right in front of them, they can go get it. They're still an NFL team that can compete, even with all the guys I've mentioned, McDowell, Fant, Procise, Averill, Sherman, Chancellor, Odhiambo, Wellhoyt, if Jerron Reed is out for any more time. That's a lot to overcome, but the depth on this team is such that we're still able to compete to win games in the NFL at the end of the year. And if we can do it and put it all together, man, hats off to Pete Carroll and crew. And if it doesn't happen, I hate to be able to have to point to injuries as being a factor, but it is. It's a factor. That's a lot of guys to overcome, and it's definitely a reason I think that we may not go deep into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You need guys like Sherman and Averill and Chancellor to be on the field to make a difference for your team. And so we'll see. I mean, fingers crossed. never given up.
Yep.
So that's it. Is there anything else, Keith, before we head out?
No, I just need to go drink some tea and make my throat feel better.
Awesome. I think you should do that. You've earned it, man.
Doing anything fun for Thanksgiving?
So, you know, family, just having family here. My kid's probably going to like make serious quantities of noise on his drums and guitar. I've got, my mom and dad are coming. We've got family friends coming. So there's going to be like 10, 12 of us or something like that in the house. Doing two turkeys. I'm doing the big one. My wife's letting me do the 20 pound turkey on the Traeger this year. So I get to do the Traeger turkey, and then the other one's going in the oven. So we'll see who wins on that competition. I think I'm going to win. And then we're doing all the basic, you know, good fun stuff as far as food goes. How about you, Keith?
I'm hosting. My sister's coming into town. My parents are coming into town. My father-in-law's coming into town. So I'm hosting everyone here, and we're doing the big turkey thing and watching football and enjoying family. And the noise here will be made by my kids and my sister's kids, and probably me with my new guitar, because I went out and bought one this last week, and I'm
awesome.
Well, I can't stop playing with it. So.
Is it an acoustic or electric acoustic, or what do you got going?
It's electric. It's a Gibson. It's nice. I enjoy it.
Sweet.
I'll have to show it to you one of these days. It's right here, actually.
Not absolutely.
I know how to play anything, but one of my
we'll have to get you and Logan together and jam.
No, because he knows way more, and he is way better at playing than I am, and I am just barely learning chords at this point still. So,
well, congrats. You're already ahead of me. I'm not even there.
No, I've heard Logan play. He can jam. He's, he has some skills that I do not possess yet. So you're going to have to give me some time to catch up.
That's funny. So, well, thanks again, everybody. I mean, it was a great show. I hate losing. It's kind of an awful thing to have to work through analyzing a loss, but, you know, I feel better after the talk. It's kind of a reset on the expectations I kind of go through with you every week. It's kind of therapy, football therapy, to have a conversation with Keith, you know. And so hopefully you guys benefit out there from that as well. Thanks for joining us. Follow Keith on Twitter. He's a great follow, at Myers NFL. I am at NW Seahawk, Northwest Seahawk. You can find the show at HawksPlaybook.com or at HawksPlaybook on Twitter, at HawksPlaybook.com as the website. We've got all the shows up there. They're all archived and in order. So come out and have a listen. Tell your friends. Subscribe. All that good stuff. So if nothing else, Keith, we'll see you next time. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll go get that win in San Francisco and have an even better podcast next Tuesday.
Yeah, let's have another win. I don't want to start talking about a losing streak. That would definitely not be as fun as talking about a win. So let's go talk about a win next week.
Yeah. Perfect.
Have a happy Thanksgiving,
see you next
Bill.
Time, man.
Hey, Hawks fans. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio and listen to all of our shows on HawksPlaybook.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at HawksPlaybook. Bill is at NWCHawk and Keith is at Myers NFL.